brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and Straight Talk with the Guys in the Community.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to Soft Web Radio. Soft Web Radio, on time, on target. I'm your host this morning, Steve Balestrieri. Joining us, we have a very special guest. Sergeant Major of the Army Michael Grinston is joining us here on the podcast this morning. And just want to let all our listeners know we are recording this on Tuesday morning, the 19th. So by the time everyone hears this, it'll be after the inauguration. So the questions that we'll be talking about the upcoming inauguration, they're going to be before the fact. So if anyone has any heartburn with that, you can email us and let us know about it. But before we get into any of all that, we want to welcome the Sergeant Major to our podcast. Sergeant Major, welcome to Soft Web Radio. We are honored to have you here with us. And thanks for taking the time. I know this is a very busy time for you.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Sure. And as all of us are, and including all of our listeners out there, I just wanted to ask you, you know, fill in our listeners just a little bit about your highlights of your military career. I know you've been in the military quite a few years now, and, you know, one doesn't just become the Sergeant Major of the Army overnight. It's a long process.
Yeah. every once in a while, it feels like people think that, like I came in the Army yesterday and they hired me to be the Sergeant Major of the Army. So, no, which is not true. But a lot of times it's funny, but I actually have to remind people, you know, I came in the Army as a PFC 32 years ago. So, I lived in the barracks for 7 years, went through all the ranks, just pretty much, you know, like any soldier would do. But some people, you know, you got to remind people that. And, you know, I joined the Army as an artillery soldier, as a cannon crew member of 13 Bravo. Gun bunny, whatever you want to call it. It never really changed my MOS, but I really enjoyed my career. And it's been really a lot more diverse than I would have thought, having only one MOS. I mean, I went to Ranger School in 1990, and I think that's normally what confuses people. 13 Bravos don't normally go to Ranger School. And then at some point, for about 10 years, that MOS wasn't even allowed to go. So I really looked like a unicorn at some point where, you know, there was like maybe 10, 13 Bravos in the Army that were Ranger qualified. So, but what the other confusing thing is my first sergeant job was in an infantry unit. So I was a first sergeant in Italy in the 173rd and the HHC, second to the 503rd. So people go, oh, he used to be artillery. I said, no, I'm still artillery. So, but, you know, being a, you know, having a rifle company in the 2nd and 503rd and a parachute infantry regiment in the 173rd, it's a highlight of my career. I'm really proud of that. Learned a lot and just kind of fit with, you know, my personality. And then I was selected for 2 infantry brigades. So, I think, and deployed to. So 2 times to Afghanistan, I had a brigade in Baumholder. It was the 170th Infantry Brigade out of Baumholder. And then I had 4th Brigade of the 101st out of the Currahees in Fort Campbell before they inactivated the brigade. And we again deployed to Afghanistan. So I just really have enjoyed all the jobs I've got to do through my career. But it has been really diverse, you know, outside of battalion, you know, and most, I was selected for all these infantry brigades and doing all the combat, 5 years of combat. And most of that has all been maneuver. And I think in Desert Shield, Desert Storm, I was like a, you know, 13 Bravo on a gun. But then after that, most of it was, hey, just give it battle space and fly, be free and enjoy. So It's been a great career. I really love it. I love what I do, and I love it when people ask me, so how do you like being, you know, how do you like the Army? I said, I'm a Sergeant Major of the Army. I love my job. So I was like, and then I'd usually joke and say, you know, hey, everybody should do it. And yeah, you know, I'm really going to put in for that. And the last thing is what I really like to say. So sometimes I say, you know, I'm a Sergeant Major of the Army. You know, when people sometimes they say, hey, where do you work? And I usually say Pentagon. And they'll go, well, where do you work in the Pentagon? And I'll just, yeah. So it's like, you know, I try to avoid it. And sometimes I'll work for the Chief of Staff of the Army. And every once in a while, you know, some people figure it out, you know, what I do. But sometimes I'll say I'm the Sergeant Major of the Army. And I think what they hear is, oh, you're a sergeant in the Army, which is really cool, too. So, I've got a great job. It's highly recommended for anybody to do that job. But every day I wake up and say I'm really proud to be in the Army and to make a difference for all our soldiers.
Have you ever searched for something online that you didn't want others knowing about? And I know most of you are probably thinking, well, why don't you just use incognito mode? Let me tell you something. Incognito mode does not hide your activity. It does not matter what mode you use or how many times you clear your browsing history. Your internet service provider can still see every single website you've ever visited. Every single website. That's great, folks. That's why even when I'm at home, I never go online without using ExpressVPN. It doesn't matter if you get your internet from Verizon or Comcast or any of the other local ISP offerings. ISPs in the U.S. can legally sell your information to ad companies. That's right, folks. They can sell your information to ad companies. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure service to your ISP so your ISP can't see the sites that you visit. ExpressVPN also keeps all your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. Most times, I don't even realize I'm using ExpressVPN when it's on. It runs seamlessly in the background, and it's very easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button, and you're protected. ExpressVPN is available on all your devices, phones, computers, even your smart TV. So there's no excuse for you not to be using it. Protect your online activity today with the VPN rated number one by CNET and Wired. Visit my exclusive link, expressvpn.com/softrep, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/softrep.
Now, do you travel quite a bit? I know with the COVID that might have changed a little bit in the past year, but I mean, as Sergeant Major of the Army, you're probably on the road quite a bit during the year.
Oh yeah, we're usually gone most of the time. Tried to, you know, in the beginning, we were just like, hey, can I get a week at home, you know, in the Pentagon? But COVID did slow it down a little bit. And there's periods of time when, you know, like right now with the inauguration and things going on, we're not going to travel. But, you know, most of the time we're still out there. And, you know, about a week, maybe 10 days ago, actually 13 days ago, we're at Fort Hood. We went to Fort Bliss. So now, even with COVID, we still do a lot of virtual meetings I call virtual battlefield circulation, or just getting to see the troops where we'll get certain. If I can't get there because of COVID, we'll pull up a VTC, a Teams call, and we'll talk the soldiers out. So we're finding new ways to do it, but there's still some travel involved in that.
Absolutely. I'm sure there is. I mean, for your job, you're always having to get a pulse on what's going on with the troops. And that leads into my next question. I mean, we're winding down a bunch of really long-term combat deployments for the past 20 years. How's the Army doing culture-wise? I mean, I know there was a lot of, you know, issues that were in the news about this and that. And we always hear the bad news, but how's the Army doing overall, do you feel, you know, going into 2021?
Yeah. Well, I still think, you know, we still, and have always thought this. We still have the greatest army the world has ever seen. That's how we're doing. So I would tell anybody that we are harder on ourselves than anybody else, and we will always be that way, and our nation expects that of us. And you've seen some things. We had the Fort Hood Independent Review, where we took a really hard look at our culture on one installation. And out of that, we said, yeah, maybe we do need to change some things. We created the People First Task Force, where they would take some of the recommendations from this independent review at Fort Hood, and see, do we have this right in the Army? And do we need to change some of our policies with regards to culture when it comes to sexual assault, sexual harassment, suicides, racism, extremism? So all that is rolled into it. But again, we're extremely hard on ourselves because we want to make sure that we remain ready for our nation. And one of those big things that I keep talking about is this is my squad. Is how do we build, a really deep understanding of those around us? So how do you build a cohesive team? And I would say, look at our special forces. They have really good small unit team cohesion. So that's what, when I say this is my squad, the personal pronoun of ownership means a lot to me. When you say it's my squad, or you can say my squad leader, or even my family, that's my daughter, that's my dad. Those things of ownership are really important. And we really tried to focus in on getting a culture that builds fit, disciplined, well-trained, cohesive teams at the small unit level. And we've always done this, but we're really trying to do this in a whole new way where we really know the background of the soldier sitting next to us. And that builds that rich, deep cohesion that, we all strive to be. And we want to really focus at the small unit level. And this is not about an infantry squad. This is about, it's like a term of endearment. My squad, the people I know. Remember I said my family just a second ago is, I'm a member of more than one squad. My wife, my kids, that's my family squad. But then, one of my squads in the Army, which is really cool. I got the Secretary of the Army, the Chief of Staff of the Army, the Vice, the Under, and the Senior Warrant is Chief Dixon Carter. And I usually challenge people. I said, my squad's cooler than your squad. So I really like it. And, those people that are around you that notice the differences, they know who you are. They know when you're tired or you're angry, and they go, man, are you okay? And they can check on you. So that's really what we're trying to focus on, that culture. But, again, we still have the greatest Army in the world, and I'm really proud to be in the Army.
Yeah, and I know I'm kind of biased having served in the Army myself, so I tend to agree with you on that. We hear about the bad things that, make the news, but overall, this is still the most professional, best-run military in the world, and we prove it every day with the guys that are out there. So, yeah, but getting back to, you talked about you visited Fort Hood. You think that was just maybe an isolated problem on the base with the leadership that was involved there? I mean, or do you think that this is, the situation runs deeper than that? It could be, there's some issues throughout the military. I know it's never perfect because we have, it's a mirror of our society. We have a melting pot of everybody that's, in our country. But do you think it was just an isolated problem there at Fort Hood?
Yeah, and what and that's one of the reasons we established the People First Task Force is to kind of look at that and say, hey, is this something that is an issue for the Army? Is this a policy that we need to change? So right now, I would say this is something we really need to look at throughout the Army. But I could say I kind of said the same thing when I was coming in to be the Sergeant Major of the Army. I said, we need to know our soldiers better. remember that you know, I keep going back to that ownership is one of those things I thought we were lacking throughout the Army. So some of the things I saw in the report are the same things I saw probably 13, 14, 15 months ago as I came in to be the Sergeant Major of the Army, is getting to know our soldiers and taking care of them no matter what. You know, we often say that, you know, we see a soldier and they're about to be shot. You know, you would do anything for that small group. You would literally do anything. I'll die, go through withering fire, jump on the IED. We're going to do it to take care of each other. We have to do the same thing when it comes to those things that really plague, you know, sometimes in the Army: suicide, sexual assault, sexual harassment, and racism, extremism. So we got to be willing to take care of our soldiers. And that's what I read in the report were some of the things that were missing, where we didn't really wrap our arms around our soldiers and not let these things happen to them. So I believe this is something we need to all look at. I think as an Army, we need to do better. And if there's some policies and procedures that we need to do wrong, the People First Task Force is going to help us at. But yes, I think this is something we all need to look at in every camp, post, and station in the Army.
And, you know, when you talked about, you know, taking care of your soldiers, I always remember what one of my sergeant majors used to say about taking care of troops. And he was like, you know, we all tend to think that before we deploy, you know, we're taking care of all of our guys and checking all the blocks before we hit the aircraft and go somewhere. It starts well before that. And if you're waiting until it's time to deploy, then you're not doing your job. It's doing it well before you reach that point. And taking care of troops, it should be an everyday thing, and where we're preparing to deploy long before we ever get that call.
Yeah, and this isn't, I agree, this isn't something, you know, you just do for troop movement. This is how we treat everybody on a routine basis. But I do clarify, because a lot of times people say, you know, take care of the troops, you know, and how does that fit with readiness and training? It's the same thing. So yeah. Getting, you know, some of the best team building events I've had in my Army career were, you know, out in the field in the rain, you know, laying in a, you know, a mud puddle. And, you know, I build a very strong, cohesive team, and some of the really difficult, challenging training events I've had. So taking care, putting people first, doesn't mean we're not going to be ready. You know, in the Army is about people. And if our people are ready and they're well-trained, disciplined, and fit, that means we are taking care of them. So readiness and taking care of people, to me, are synonymous. It's not something different. It is the same thing. But sometimes people like to say, well, if you put people first, you can't be ready. That's in the Army, I don't think that's true. Maybe in another service, but not for us.
Absolutely. And, you know, going back to the suicide problem in the military, it's still kind of an albatross hanging over us as a country, not just the military. I think it's something that, you know, is affecting our entire country. And do you think part of the reason for that, and this is just your personal opinion, I mean, I know you're not speaking for the whole military there, but do you think there's just that stigma in people's minds that they're afraid to admit that they need some help? And that's part of the reason why, you know, guys are reaching, and women for that matter, I say that, you know, generally, but, you know, our troops, is that part of the reason why, you know, we're seeing these numbers continue?
Yeah, I think, yeah, and you hit it. You know, this is not just an Army issue. This is like, you know, it's just an, you know, American society issue. And I think there is some of the stigma, you know, if I ask for help, that means I can't do it myself. When we build a culture where, you know, I can do anything, I can do it, you know, mm-hmm. Hey, can I do this? I can do that. But, you know, I equate it to, you know, sometimes when I, you know, if my leg's hurting, you know, I go, man, my leg sure is hurting. You know, I go to the doc, I go to the physical therapist, and they go, hey, you need to do this stretch, you need to do that, and that'll make your we need to look at behavioral health the same way. But I agree, there are those, and we build this culture of, you know, these over-aggressive, you know, highly motivated, well-trained, you know, I can take care of any mission mentality, and then say, yes, I need to ask for help. So I think there is, and, you know, but as a senior leader, we keep saying it's okay to seek help. But you're right. I usually hear this everywhere I go. It's like, well, there's still what we need to get away is that your leaders support you. And I think we got to get away from, you know, the leaders are going to hold this against me. We're not. We all need to get a tune-up. If my leg was hurting, you wouldn't chastise me to go see the doctor for my leg hurting. I shouldn't chastise you if I need to go seek some behavioral help. And we got to get rid of that stigmatism that, hey, we can't do that. It's okay to seek behavioral help.
And can you clarify something? Because we hear this all the time, but I've never seen any, confirmation of this. There's this stigma that, oh, if I ask for help, I'm going to lose my security clearance. And I hear this all the time, but I've never seen any actual documentation of that. So, you know, can you put that rumor to bed?
Yes, put it to bed right now. So, yeah, it's, you know, I hear this all the time. So, seeking mental health will not cause you to lose your security clearance. I mean, it's just, we've pulled all the numbers on why people lose their security clearance. Now, you know, if you have, you know, something very derogatory, I use drugs, mm-hmm. and I went to seek behavioral help, then, yeah, you might lose security clearance. It wasn't because you went to seek behavioral help, it's because you were doing something illegal. So, but I think sometimes those two are put together and it's like, oh, I went to behavioral health. Yeah, but there was the four other things that happened before you did that that caused you to lose your security guards, not the behavioral health. So it's it's less than 1% of all the people that seek behavioral health, you know, will lose a security clearance. But that's usually something pretty extreme. But like I said, it's usually 2 to 3 things kind of piled on that kind of mm-hmm. cause us to, you know, look at the security clearance.
Okay. And, you know, back when I was in, you know, around the same time you started, so I'm going to date myself a little bit again there, but, you know, we always were concerned about the dynamic between NCOs and officers. How do you feel that is working, you know, in this era? Because, you know, we're going through so many changes. Are the NCOs and officers, is that dynamic working better today than maybe it did in my time?
Yeah, I think the officer and NCO relationship is, you know, it's alive and well. We, you know, I like to say this, and this question doesn't come off too much, but I will say we have the greatest NCO Corps out of any service in any country that I've ever seen. And that comes with the trust of our officers. If our officers didn't trust our non-commissioned officers, we wouldn't have a great NCO Corps. It just wouldn't happen. So we continue to have the greatest Army because our officers' trust said, okay, Sergeant, you can go do this. If we take that away, you know, they would have to do it. And then, you know, we'd be like a whole bunch of other armies in the world. So I still think that that's why we have the greatest Army in the world, because our NCOs can do things that allow our officers to work at the really hard stuff. You know, they provide, you know, even all the way down to junior level, if I say, if you provide me the resources, I will get the soldiers trained. You know, you give me the range, the ammo, and the time. Usually the time is the big one. You know, and then, you know, the NCO will bring in the expertise on how to qualify, the expert how to zero your weapon, you know, physical fitness, you know. And then that's how great our Army is because of those two pieces work together, that allows us to do more than any other service or any other country that I've seen in the world. It's like, oh, we can do more because we allow our NCOs to do that, and that continues to expound. It was great when I first came in the Army, and it's just as great, if not more, than where I'm at right now. Our officers allow us, they trust us. We got to earn that trust every day. And that's another thing about my squad is I have to build that trust in my squad every day. My person, with the secretary and the chief, they have to trust that when I'm going out to check on, you know, a National Guardsman at their checkpoint in D.C., that I know what I'm doing, then I'm going to give them honest feedback from what I see. And they trust that I'm going to do that well. If I don't have that trust, it's hard to go do any of those things. So I think that relationship is there, and I see it at all levels, and I'm really proud of it. And I think it's going to continue to ebb and flow. We're going to see places where that doesn't work so well, and then, you know, we'll try to do better. But it's usually based off of trust, and I think that's still going well. And I'm really proud of how the officer and NCO relationship works in the United States Army.
And, you know, speaking of, I mean, you're obviously dealing with a lot higher, interactions than the average soldier does. But it all goes back to, and you talked about it being a position of trust. And, you know, we used to tell, I was an instructor at the SF school. And when guys would come through SFAS and they would, you know, come through, we'd always tell them you're always being assessed, and it will never stop from the time you enter the Army until the time you leave, because, you know, that level of trust and that assessment continues. And as you grow and you get different and higher ranks, you'll be looked upon even harder. It doesn't get easier, it gets harder as you go on, and I'm sure that you can attest to that.
Oh yeah, every day I get assessed. Sometimes in Reddit, I don't know, Twitter, you name it. So, some people I think really hate me. So, you're right. You know, the higher you go, you get a lot of assessments as a Sergeant Major Army. You get a lot of, some not so positive, but you know, I think that's okay. You know, some people say, well, how do you gotta go into this, you gotta be willing to do what you think is right, and that's not always going to be, you know, what people want, and that's kind of comes with part of the job is some of that criticism. I think that's what makes us great. We take the criticism, and then maybe I need to do something better. Maybe one of those posts in social media, maybe they're right. Maybe I need to do something better. We look at those, and I have to do my own personal assessment. Sometimes I get a lot more feedback than other times, but I think that's what's great about our Army. We can be critical. We take it and say, do I need to do better? And if I do, then, you know, ruck up, do better. And if you don't, you know, take it for what it's worth. But I think you're right. You're always going to be assessed. And this time, you know, when you start Major Army, I got a million plus people that are assessing me all the time. Maybe 300 million. So
you have to have a thick skin at that point. I mean, you have to be able to take it, you know, constructively, but you still have to have kind of a thick skin, because we know how social media can be, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. But Sergeant Major, let's talk about, what's upcoming, obviously, tomorrow. And again, for our listeners out there, we are recording this on Tuesday morning, prior to the inauguration. There's a lot of rumors out there, and you know, by the time everyone hears this, it'll be after the fact. But it seems like there's a lot of preparation in the event that there's a problem tomorrow. And can you speak to how well the soldiers have been deploying? We've seen pictures of them sleeping all over the Capitol. As we all know, soldiers can sleep anywhere at any time if they have 5 minutes. So. But, you know, can you speak to the preparations that are going on and the jobs that the soldiers are doing?
Yeah, I can tell you, I am really proud of our National Guard. I couldn't be more proud of how, the Army National Guard, Sergeant Major John Santa, you know, we're constantly going out and assessing our soldiers and see how we're doing. And he and I talked about it. I said, you know, we just did, you know, this is a big mobilization. So, you know, if you want to look at, you know, how to mobilize the Guard, this is it. And think about 13 days ago, you know, we did not have 25,000 troops in mobilized across 50 states in D.C. So I'm extremely impressed with what our National Guard soldiers have done to do. This is no kidding. Drop what you're doing and go. So a lot of times they may ask for, you know, who would like to go do this mission, and people say, I'll go do it. But with, you know, 25,000, it was not, hey, who would like to go? This is you're going, and we're all going now. So I'm really impressed with how the Guard has reacted to this, and I'm extremely proud of them. And they're well prepared. I mean, I was at the Capitol, and, you know, I see a soldier, he's in kit, and then right next to him was a commander and a first sergeant, and they, you know, here's my area. This is what I'm responsible. Here's my duties. Here's my task, my purpose, and this is what I've been assigned to do to the person. So I'm extremely proud of how they have mobilized and prepared for this mission. And I'm gonna go out. You know, you're right. You're going to hear about this, and you're going to judge me, because I'm going to say right now, the inauguration is going to be a nice, peaceful, wonderful event. Without incident, and I will be judged when you hear this.
Well, that's going on record. So, but yeah, I, you know, speaking just for my own self, I don't expect that there's going to be an issue there, but, you know, we've been proven wrong before, but it's good to know that the troops are prepared for that. And, you know, a lot of what transpired a few weeks ago was, you know, blamed on social media and how things were perceived and said on social media. Is, with that being said, I know the Army has rules on social media. Is, because of that, will anything be subject to change in the future?
We're always looking for the rules on social media. You know, so we're constantly assessing this. You know, our policy is to think, type, and post, but you know, we're always getting folks that do things. I'm just going to go, okay, well, what I would say is if, you know, if you're doing something that's illegal and you're doing that in social media, you know, that's where, you know, you will and you can get in trouble. So this kind of comes up all the time, but we're constantly evaluating how we act. And this is a new space that we're in. And I feel, you know, I think it's, gone are the days that you can type anything you want in social media, you know, because like you said, we're all being assessed. Mm-hmm. If you say something that's inappropriate, you know, those things will be looked into.
I wanted to ask you about some changes that came through with basic training and the Army physical fitness test. I know that those are still ongoing, but do you feel like was there a procedural process that you went through that say, okay, we've seen something and where our warfighters can be better equipped to handle the rigors of combat in the future?
Yeah, I'll start off with the changes in basic training. So, you know, a lot of people said, oh, you know, it was called the shark attack. I'm not sure they explained that to me when I was a drill sergeant. That was called the shark attack. So, whatever we want to call it, the shark attack, and they said, hey, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to call it the first 100 yards. And so I was like, you know, the Army's getting soft. We're going to, you know, I don't know. I've seen it, you know, again, on social media, you see all kinds of comments. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's much harder than what I was a drill sergeant in 1997, you know, 97, 99. So, I tell you, the way the soldiers were in, I mean, that first day is tough. And anybody that thinks it's easy and, you know, it's much, what you went through was much harder, I will ask you all, come join me and I'll let you go through that first 100 yards and see how you do. it is not easy. It's like, you know, after about 2 hours, like, okay, finally they will get to their bay. So, they may run a mile right off the bat, then they got tasks. It's not the drill sergeant against the recruits anymore. It's the task. So they just give them a series of tasks that builds teamwork. That, remember, this is my squad. How do I work as a team? This is how we do it. And it just, you know, they don't complete the task, which most of them don't. You know, they're going to get some corrective training. They're going to do some push-ups. They're going to do this. And they got another task. And some of those are physical tasks. They have to run a mile, and then they keep going. So, yeah, I encourage anyone to, if you think it's if it's easier, let me know, and we'll take you out for that first 100 yards.
I remember that first day quite well. I think Fort Benning dropped 6 inches in elevation from all the push-ups we did, and it helps. I mean, it's a culture shock, as we all know, going from, you know, the civilian world to the military, and that's the best way, I think, to get the soldiers into that military frame of mind. It's no longer about individual. It's, you know, the team comes first, your teammates come second, and individually you come third. And that's the way I was always taught, and I'm sure it hasn't changed.
Yeah, it's still that way. We just reinforce teamwork now, as opposed to, like I said, the stressor in the beginning. When I was drill sergeant, that was the stress between the drill sergeant and the soldier. Now it's the stress of the task, and building teamwork, and the soldier, not, you know, some other individual. The second thing you talked about, and, you know, we could talk about this in closing, is, you know, the Army Combat Fitness Test. Clearly, this is a little bit more challenging than I anticipated that would go through. So there's some language in the National Defense Authorization Act that we need to do an independent study to look at the Army Combat Fitness Test. We're starting that. We've already started it. So we've assigned the folks to look at it. We'll have the final results in December. So we're still hopeful that, you know, the Army Combat Fitness Test, unless barring some new laws, will come to fruition in March of 22. But it's a really good test. It builds a total fitness. You know, it's 6 events as opposed to 3. It's not just, you know, it doesn't work on one side of the body. It's both the front and the back, you know, the posterior and the anterior, so that you work those muscles that you don't normally use. And the whole goal is to make us more fit. So it has no other goal, you know. There's no other reason. It's not to be, you know, exclusive. It's to be inclusive, to make sure that we all have a better fitness. And when we work on these tests, these events, it'll make us a more fit Army. We still have, you know, about a year to look at this. We've made changes from the beginning. So we're starting to call them 2.0. We've got a proposal for a 3.0 that it will be coming out pretty soon. So this isn't, you know, it's not set in stone exactly what it's going to look like, and neither was the old PAIGH Army Physical Fitness Test. It changed over time, too. So this is no different, but I'm still excited to see if we can get this done in the next year. So this will be good for our Army. So we're still moving it forward as best we can with the new Army Combat Fitness Test.
It's quite challenging. I mean, I'm an older guy now, but I tried it, and it's not easy. I'll tell you, it's especially those, what do they call them, those leg tuck things there? That's pretty challenging, even, you know, for us older folks. But
yeah, you know, everybody loves the leg tuck. Everybody. Yeah. Just embrace it.
Embrace the suck and get over it. And, you know, if you embrace it, then you'll get better at it. It's like everything else, the more you work at it. But
yeah, we did do an alternate event because a lot of soldiers are struggling with the leg tuck. And now you can do a plank. Mm-hmm. You can do one leg tuck or 2 minutes of plank. I'm going to be honest with you, because I can do a leg tuck. I'd much prefer to get that 5 seconds of one leg tuck as opposed to the 2 minutes of plank.
Plank.
But yeah. There is an alternate event for the leg tuck. And that's version 2.0. So the mm-hmm. original version didn't have that. So that's what I mean. It continues to evolve. So our goal is to get this right, to make us a better fit Army.
Now, I know we're running short on time because you're a busy man right now, but are there any other issues that are near and dear to you right now that you want to, you know, speak about with what's going on with our military and our NCO Corps out there and soldiers?
No, just the there's a lot of things that we're trying to do better with our NCOs and our soldiers and the whole Army. You know, it's this whole culture of getting to know yourselves and getting to know your people. And it's not that we didn't have a time that wasn't important. That was always important. But we just, we're, 20 years now of, still soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. The number may have gone down, but they still have soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. We've done that for 20 years. And then we still have over 180,000 soldiers forward deployed somewhere outside the U.S., somewhere across the globe. So your Army is still busy. But with all that, going on, I said that's what's going on in Iraq, Afghanistan. But like you said in the beginning, those things that your Army has done in the background in this last year have been phenomenal. And you're right. Maybe it doesn't make the news. Maybe it doesn't make the news that, well, it did make the news and we killed Soleimani. But, to reduce those tensions between the U.S. and Iran is because we have a strong army. Sending out the first troops to go to New York and Washington State to help with COVID were active duty soldiers out of our medical treatment facilities. One of the highest hurricane seasons we've had in years have been your active duty Army and your National Guard soldiers making sure that families could be taken care of if they just got flooded out of their house. Oh, and by the way, there are forest fires going on, and in the western states we have National Guard alerted to go do that, all while COVID's still going on. So all those things that are in the background that we're doing, it's still there. And it may not make the news, but I can promise you, your Army has been here. It's been rock steady. It's been solid. We've been every task we've been asked to do. We just want to, I call it head down. We're not in it to make any press. We're here to make sure our people are safe and taken care of. And that's no matter what. In the last year, COVID, civil unrest, combat operations in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, around the globe, your Army is still there. And we're going to continue to be the steady organization in the near future.
Outstanding. And about the COVID, are soldiers getting a priority of being vaccinated for this?
Yeah, we're still using, the guidelines from the CDC. So we have a very good list on who that goes, but we're still doing the same thing. If it's a medical professional, those still at the top of the list. But we, the Army leads. We don't talk about exact numbers of who's been vaccinated, but, we are, if there are no doses sitting idle, So, as we get doses, they're out. But we're still using some of the CDC guidelines from the Secretary, the DOD. But we're moving out. We're at a very high injection rate. I think we're over 70% of the soldiers out there. But the key is, get vaccinated. If you're in that priority, take the vaccine. We don't need, as a country, we don't need people going, oh, I'm not going to do it, because I don't think that would be healthy for our country.
No. Good luck to you. I know that, starting tomorrow, you're going to have a lot more new faces, I should say, in the chain of command. So I'm sure that'll be a challenge, because now you have to learn all the new faces and put names to them all that are going to be upcoming. But I have to mention one thing. I'm pretty jealous of all of you guys now. The new uniforms, the pink and greens, were always my favorite. My dad fought in World War II. I've seen the pictures of him in his dress uniform, and I thought those were the sharpest uniforms the Army ever had. And how's the reaction been as that's being changed over?
Yeah, I mean, everybody, everybody's like, I want them. When do I get mine? When do I get them? So, the reaction has been received extremely well. So everybody likes them. We're going to make a few little changes, just like all uniforms we do. But overall, everybody likes them. You know, public and everybody. I think it's a sharp looking uniform, and we all like it. And I will say, you talked about the leadership change now. I can tell you two things. Number one, you know, the Secretary of the Army, Ryan McCarthy, has been a phenomenal leader. And his dedication to serve, you know, as the undersecretary and the secretary has been unbelievable. And his support to the soldiers and the way he cares for soldiers, no one will probably see that like I do because, you know, he's in my squad. But his passion for our soldiers and families has been phenomenal. And I couldn't think of a better person to serve with as a Sergeant Major of the Army and serve for. And Secretary McCarthy, and I know there'll be changes at the top, but for the Army, what's great about the Army, we're used to that. We get a new commander, and you know, it changes in command all the time. You know, so it's the same thing. Here's the standard we've given the Army. If those standards change, you adapt. If the standard hadn't changed, you know, again, head down, row, you know, and work hard. So. And again, we're steady. So the changes at the top, we'll take that guidance. But for predominantly the most of the Army, we're used to change. We're always doing some kind of change of command at some point. So stay true to who we are. You know, focus in on those small teams that are well trained, disciplined, and fit, that are cohesive teams. And I think we'll be just fine.
Excellent, Sergeant Major. We really want to thank you for joining us here today. I know with all that's going on in Washington and in the world, you're a busy man. So we appreciate your insight and you taking the time to speak with us today. You know, for all of us here at Software and Software Radio, we thank you. And just a quick note, folks, for our listeners out there, if you want to get Software on your phone, download our free mobile app to get easy access to our articles, podcasts, and gear reviews, all perfectly formatted to fit your device. Please subscribe to softrep.com to get access to all our library of ebooks and our exclusive team room forums and content available on Apple and all of your Android devices. Sergeant Major, thank you very much. We wish you all the best, and you know, hopefully we can do this again sometime soon.
Sure, thank you.
Okay, and for all of us here at Softrep Radio, we want to thank all our listeners for tuning in. Thanks for all of our input that we get from our articles on there. We want to thank the Sergeant Major of the Army once again for taking the time to join us. For all of us here at SoftRep and SoftRep Radio, thanks for listening. We'll be back with another podcast real soon.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio.